We got a real groovy message tonight, okay? And what I want to do this evening, I don't know if you're going to be able to take me seriously. I'm just going to have to trust that you're going to stay calm and take me seriously tonight, all right? So last week, you know, we started this, is entitled, What You Need to Know About Sex Before You Get Your Groove On. And last week, I had a whole lot of things I wanted to tell you, and I had more, but I decided I have to carry them over to this week so I could finish. So last week, basically what I did was help you understand that by and large, most of the things you've seen on television and Hollywood and you hear in music are basically a gross distortion and in many respects an out-and-out lie about what sex really is and what it isn't and what's really good sex and what's really bad sex. And I told you last week that unless you change your paradigm of how you think, you're headed for major problems once you get married. Now, I'm assuming, of course, that about 85% of you, 90% of you are going to end up getting married someday. And if you're here for the first time, I'm sorry you didn't get to hear last week. You can get it on tape if you want, and then tonight will make a lot more sense. But let me just reiterate to you. Number one, I've been married 20 years. I've had a lot more sex than a lot of you in this room. Probably most of you in this room. Number two, I've been pastoring and counseling people for the last 14 years, and I have dealt with hundreds and thousands of couples who are struggling with this issue because of the bad habits and the lies that they, one, the habits they sowed, and two, the lies and expectations that they had, and they brought the baggage right into their marriage, and it's not working. It can work. It can work, and what I'm going to do this evening is tell you what it takes to have a great sex life in marriage, all right? And by the way, if you go out and try it this week, it ain't going to work till you're married. It really won't. You can think it will. You can think, oh, I'll go try this now. But I told you last week, God, sex is a God thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a God thing. He made it, and He made it for you. And He designed it for marriage. And there's reasons why He designed it for marriage. One of the biggest reasons is because when two people come together sexually, it's more than just their bodies coming together, it's your soul. I was going to do a demonstration tonight, but we're out of time, so I'm just going to tell it to you. You can do your own little experiment when you get home. Now, this is a good demonstration. My gosh, people, the 70s stuff is getting to you. Okay, you take a piece of duct tape about this long, and put it on your back or put it on your stomach, your leg, whatever you want to do, on your clothes, all right? Take that piece of duct tape and it just comes right off. It's not a problem. You take that piece of duct tape and you rip it. You can rip it in half down long ways. You can rip it in half, right in half, short ways. But if you take two pieces of duct tape and you experiment, you won't believe this till you try it, and you stick them together, sticky junk to sticky junk, and you can take the two biggest guys in this room, and they will not be able to rip them apart. Now, pieces of it will come apart a little bit at a time. There'll be a tear here and a tear there. And I use that, and I saw this done, to represent to you what happens when you give someone your heart before you're married to them. And you give them your body before you're married to them. And often, what happens in our society is simply this. At around 14, 15, that's the average age that that a young person has their first sexual encounter these days. What happens is they think they're in love. Sometimes they're not even. They know they're not in love. They just want to experiment with sex. But for many people, they think they're in love, and they get it on, and then they break up. And there's all this hurt, and there's all this pain, kind of like trying to pull the duct tape apart. Your heart got all involved. Your emotions got all involved. Your body got all involved, and it hurts. Then you go do it again. You get another relationship. The average person usually has 3 to 5 of these kind of relationships before they're married. Now, here's one of the things that results. Besides the tearing of your heart and the tearing of your emotions, what also happens is, and I know you're going to, well, you may laugh to yourself, but you're just going to have to trust me. I've seen things you have not seen. I've dealt with people in ways you've not dealt with people, and I've dealt with a lot of them. What dating, getting together, hooking up, having sex, breaking up, getting together with somebody new, dating, having sex, breaking up, getting together with somebody new, is it preconditions you for divorce. Because what happens is, it didn't work. There wasn't real unconditional love involved. You weren't building the relationship on something solid, something that would last. And so that's your reference point. That's all you know. And some of you know the hurt of being dumped for someone more attractive, for someone a little richer, for someone who maybe will give you a more status symbol to be seen with. And it's painful. Now, I've done a lot of weddings. I've sung in a lot of weddings, and I performed a lot of weddings. Nobody ever stands up there at that altar and says, in sickness and health, most of the people I do don't do traditional vows. They make up their own vows, which nothing wrong with that. They're good vows as long as you mean them. They never assume they're going to get divorced. What they don't realize is all the habits they cultivated before and all the relationships they had before, unless, and I'm going to share with you how you can overcome these things, okay? Unless you take a whole different path, you are headed for a lot of pain. Because I'm going to tell you something. Marriage and parenting are going to be the two most challenging things that have ever happened in your life. And if you think you hurt before, then you got another thing coming when now you're with the person, you've made a commitment, there's really no easy way out. And they find out what you're really like in marriage. They see the flaws. They see you get frustrated and mad, and they get disappointed, and you get let down. Then what are you going to do? You see, because in all honesty, for most people, you know what dating is? It's a false reality. It's a false reality. Nobody is at their worst on a date. Everyone always tries to act their best. And even if you see them, unless you live with them, even if you see them 4 or 5 nights a week, you can still go home and get mad when you're home or be however you are at your job. And then you get all pumped up because you're going to see them, and then you see them, you act a certain way, you get it on, it's just this vicious cycle. People who live together, your chances of staying married without living together are 50-50. If you walked into my office and I was a doctor and I looked at you and said, you got a 50-50 chance to live, you would not be very encouraged. If you live together, you're almost twice to 3 times as likely to get divorced after you get married. And that's the facts. That's the statistics. Now, with all that said, what I want you to know, I got a call from a young lady last week after the service. And by the way, you're free to call me, any of you, anytime you want. I live in Bloomington. My number's in the Bloomington phone book. Or you can write to my email address and you can get that out of the program. And she really liked the message. Well, nothing she didn't like about the message. She said it really helped me see a lot of things. But she said it also really scared me because, Mark, she sent me her story through email. She said, I've sowed an awful lot of bad things in my life. I was extremely promiscuous. And she said, I'm worried that the things you said, I'm going to bring into marriage. And, geez, Mark, I don't want to be stuck with a bad relationship for a long time the rest of my life. And I said, well, I appreciate you calling. I'm glad you called. You come next week, but I'll go ahead and tell you all this stuff now. God is in the business of healing hearts and transforming lives and behavioral patterns and attitudes. So there is reason to have a lot of hope that God can turn your life around. He can. And He will. But you have to be willing to turn your back on these ways of doing things, the way that society says to do them. And you have to be willing to embrace God's ways of doing things and build your life on God and the foundation of what the Bible tells us for healthy relationships. I don't know if you knew this, but the majority of the New Testament is written about our relationships with one another. So what I want to do this evening is I want to go into some of the principles that you're going to need to know, all right, to have a great sex life. And the reason I'm telling you this, you know, some people ask me, geez, Mark, sure you want to tell a bunch of single young people this before? I think it's the best time to tell you now. So you realize, number one, it's worth waiting for. Number two, there is a better way. There is a better way. There's a better way. Okay? Number one, good sex flows from a healthy, God-centered relationship. Good sex is a byproduct of a meaningful, healthy marriage relationship. This is so important for you to understand. You see, in order to understand this, you have to understand something about mankind, okay, and womankind. When I say mankind, I mean the race of humanity. Without God in our lives, if I could just read something to you, in fact, maybe if I just read it, you would understand it just a little bit better. It's out of the book of Galatians, which is in the New Testament. And I'm going to start with verse 16. So I advise you to live according to your new life in God. Then you won't do what your sinful nature craves. The old nature loves to do evil, which is just the opposite from what God wants. And the Spirit, God's Spirit, gives us desires that are opposite from what the sinful nature, human nature, desires. These two forces are constantly fighting each other, and your choices are never free from this conflict. But when you are directed by God, you are no longer subject to the law. When you follow the desires of your sinful nature, your life will produce these evil results: sexual immorality, impure thoughts, eagerness for lustful pleasure, idolatry, participation in demonic activities, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outburst of anger, selfish ambition, division, the feeling that everyone is wrong except those in your own little group, envy, drunkenness, wild parties, and the other kinds of sin. Let me tell you again, as I've said before, that anyone who lives like this will never inherit the kingdom of God. But when God controls your life, He will produce this kind of fruit in you: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Here there's no conflict with the law. Now, you can argue, and I'll be glad. You want to argue sometime, call me, and I'll listen to you. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to look out from this room, out on the world, out on the news, out in the newspaper, just look at your own direct family and your relatives and your cousins and your aunts and your uncles. And you know what you find? You find verification of exactly what the Bible says. Selfishness is destroying our world. Self-centeredness. And that naturally comes out of us. And the only way that we can become different is to develop a God-centered life with God at the center of us. And then He produces love and joy and peace and kindness and goodness and gentleness and faithfulness and self-control, all the things that would make this world an extraordinary place to live. Now, I don't know if you realize this or if you've ever thought of this before, but the family, the marriage, is a microcosm of society. Those of you who have said to yourself, I wish we could ban all nuclear weapons. I wish there could be peace in the world. I wish everyone would love one another. That cannot happen until it starts to happen in the home. If a wife cannot even love her own husband, if a husband cannot love his wife, then we cannot love each other across racial boundaries. We cannot love one another across geographical boundaries. The problem is the decadence of the human race. And the only thing that can change that is God. And as long as society or you or anyone else rebels against God, flips God off, rather than submitting to God so that He can give you the life, the abundance that He promised. They give you a great sex life, great marriage, a wonderful family, a wonderful single life. Until you're willing to do that and build that relationship with God, then you will never have wonderful relationships horizontally. Until the vertical one is right, the horizontal will never be right. They will be filled with jealousy, self-centeredness, envy, competitiveness, comparing with others. And then, of course, to me, these passages really just describe our society today. we live in one of the most immoral civilizations in America has ever been. It's very violent. You all know it's very violent. We have the highest murder rate in the world. Because we live in a society. And by the way, other societies don't have much violence, have an awful lot of hedonism. You go all over the world, wherever you go, behind whatever borders you find, they may not have guns so people can kill each other. They have other problems. Denmark, Sweden, and Amsterdam are the most decadent, sexually immoral areas in the world. Africa is even more immoral than the United States. And they predict that in the next 10 years, close to 10 to 30 million more people will die of AIDS. And the primary reason is an intravenous drug use. It's immorality and adultery and multiple sexual partners, and the AIDS virus spreads. And let me tell you something, my friend, let me tell you something right now. AIDS is a terrible thing, and I hope and pray that they find a cure for it. And we here at The Rock, we get involved in the AIDS walk. We had probably the largest group there working in the rain, putting up their equipment, and we will do that because we care about the problems that people face. But let me tell you something right now. If tomorrow the majority of people in the world decided on monogamy, the AIDS virus would die out itself in 2 to 3 years. It's a behavioral thing primarily. It's spread that way. Now, I'm not saying it's necessarily caused because of behavior, but it's spread that way. And we have to reevaluate our values. The bottom line, I've known people, listen, it's not really a privilege. I try to help people. But let me tell you something, it's not very fun to have someone in your office who's weeping and crying because someone who said they loved them slept with them because all they wanted was a moment of sexual pleasure and they gave her herpes. All because they didn't love her enough to say, you know what, I have herpes and I would never, ever want to give it to you because I really care. Bunch of lying pigs. They don't care. If they cared, they wouldn't leave you pregnant. If they cared, they wouldn't give you the disease. They give it to you because they want a moment of sexual, personal pleasure, and they do not care that the consequences may stay with you for the rest of your life. Don't you get it? Don't we get it? It's so self-motivated. It's so selfish. And that's the fruit of human beings. I was talking some time ago to a young person. This has been quite a while ago. We had a young woman who had a very promiscuous life. She come to Christ. She come to God, and her whole life turned around. I mean, 180 degrees. She went a different direction. And God brought a young man to her life who loved God, was a God lover, and was in love with God and wanted to follow God's ways. And she told me, you know, I said to him one time, one hug from you is better than all the sex I ever had before I met you. And that is the honest to God truth. When you have the real thing, when you need a person and there is real love and your souls connect because of God, one hug from a man or a woman who see you purely, who love you for what's inside of you, is a connection that is worth more than all the sex you had before that. Number two, the secret to being a great lover is the willingness to put the other person's needs and desires before your own. You know what Jesus taught? Jesus said this to his disciples. The greatest among you will be the servant of all. The greatest among you will be the servant of all. A great lover, being a great lover, is not about how you make love. It's that being loving is your way of life. Being a great lover is not that you know how to make love. Being a great lover is being a loving person in the way you live your life and how you go about your life. There's something very, very attractive about an individual, male or female, who has your needs above their own, who's concerned about you more than they're concerned about themselves. Now, I'm going to get into this in just a moment. This relates to your character. But you cannot have a great sex life if you do not have the mentality that I am here to give and not to get. Number three, great technique is not the secret to great sex. Great character is the secret to great sex. Like patience, tenderness, thoughtfulness, forgiveness, generosity, selflessness, self-control, acceptance of the other person, learning to overlook and accept their flaws. You know why most people don't have great sex? Because there's other things in the way in the relationship. Hard feelings. Now, you know, let me tell you something, men and women. You may or may not know this, but you're different. You just look around the room later tonight at the dance downstairs, you go, huh, we're different. Okay? What society doesn't want you to know, and I'm going to get stoned for this, what feminism doesn't want you to know is that you are fundamentally different on the inside as well. And men can have a knockdown, drag-out fight with you and be ready to make love in 3 minutes. This young lady that called me the day on the phone, she just come out of probably 5 months ago, a very, very, very bad relationship. And this guy was always pressuring, telling everything was her fault, everything was her fault. She asked me the question. She said, Mark, and she was kind of emotional about it. She said, is this kiss and makeup stuff really true? I said, it's a bunch of crap. You know what you see? Do you know what you see in the movies? I can show you. I just saw one recently called Forces of Nature. You know what shows the Forces of Nature? Sandra Bullock and the other guy, whoever was in it, Matt Damon or the other guy, his buddy. I forget his buddy. Ben Affleck. I think that was the guy. They're in the bedroom. She's in her little underwear, and they're calling each other names back and forth. F you and F you and blah, 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 blah. Next thing you know, they're kissing, and she's taking his clothes. She wants to make love. Guys, can I tell you a little secret? That's a bunch of crap. That won't happen. And the more you try to make that happen, the more you're going to alienate the person that you love that you're married to. That is a bunch of crap. Women do not compartmentalize things, let me tell you. You may get slapped right in the teeth. Okay? By the way, that's another statistic no one wants you to know. Women are just as apt and likely to be physically violent in marriage than men, and in fact, they're often the one to hit first. I don't believe it's ever right, period, men or women. But guys, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. You better realize, unless you become a Christ-like man, you're not going to have a great sex life. And women, unless you become a Christ-like woman, because I tell you what, you're not going to have great intimacy in your marriage if you're holding grudges against him. And ladies, you're not going to have a great sex life if you don't have a generous spirit with the body God gave you to give to him. And men, you're not going to have a great sex life unless you have self-control. And I'm going to say one other thing I've debated about all week to say, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. This is risque, but you need to know this. Most of you ladies that have ever been promiscuous before you got married, 98% of you never had an orgasm. The guy did his business, and it was done, because he had no more strength and no more time for you because he was concerned about himself. You're made considerably different than men. And you know what it takes for a woman, guys? A lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of tenderness. And if you don't put her first, she ain't going to enjoy it very much. She's going to lay there, you do your thing, and it's over. And you can laugh all you want, but I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. I've been there. I've done that. I've made the mistakes. Not to mention the fact that I've dealt with more couples than are in this people in this room, probably 3 or 4 times over, all over the country, and conferences that I do in Latin America. I did a conference, and afterwards for 3 hours, all they wanted to talk about was questions about sex in their marriage. And the counseling that I do here, please listen up to what I'm telling you. God has something wonderful for you if you'll go about it the right way. Number four, sex can get better and better and more fulfilling and satisfying as the years go by. That's something you don't hear. People don't tell you that. You guys think, oh, it's the young people have it. I wouldn't go back and be a newlywed for all the money in the world. I wouldn't want to be 20 for anything. Because the longer you grow with that person, See, this is the beautiful thing about marriage, all right? Society tells you, you know, you get to be about my age. Some of you don't realize this, but I'm 43. And you get to be my age, and guys like me tend to look at their wife and go, I think I'll trade you in for a couple 20s. Because the eye, as Ecclesiastes said, never has its fill of seeing. The ear never has its fill of hearing. And the stomach never has its fill of eating. Sure, it's exhilarating to have an affair. I know that from talking to people who've had it, because I had one. It's exhilarating. Well, it's new. It's fresh. And then it gets stale just like everything else because you have been incapable of building a sustaining, lifelong, deeper and intimate relationship. That's the problem. You're severely handicapped. You're relationally impotent, and that's the problem. And that can be overcome with spiritual Viagra. See? And God gives you the ability to overcome the handicap that every man and woman has without Jesus Christ. That's the only way it's going to be overcome. And so the longer you marry, the longer you marry and you work at it, and you build it, and you develop your character, and you grow. Listen, I'm a lot less selfish today than I was when I first got married. I'd be the first one to admit to you, my selfishness almost ruined my marriage. 3 years into my marriage, it was broken bad. And it was broken because I had been unwilling to submit to God in this area in particular. And it left me very frustrated, very angry, and bitter. And when I finally humbled myself and admitted, I really am the problem. This needs to change in my life. If I never have sex again, it's not my right. My right is to honor God and to honor this lady that God gave to me. It began to change. It began to change as I put her needs first, as I put her interests first, as I began to realize I had to win her respect back because I'd lost it. A woman will never have great sex with a man she does not respect. Anyone can have passion. Anyone can have lust. Great, satisfying relationship comes because you really, honestly respect one another. Let me tell you this as well. You may or may not believe me, but it's the truth. You don't have to have a youthful, perfect body either. You don't have to have a youthful, perfect body to have great sex. Number five. Only a person who is committed to growing spiritually and develops a Christ-like life can really experience a satisfying marriage and sexual relationship. I want to read you again some I didn't read you last night. It's called, Aha, Call It the Revenge of the Church Ladies. This is from the editorial page of the USA Today, Thursday, February 11, 1999. Basically what the article says is that after interviews of 100,000 women, surveys done by Red Book, and a number of other university studies, they found overwhelmingly that women who attend religious services regularly, who have stayed a virgin as long as they can, have the least sexual baggage brought into their marriage, and have little sexual experience, have a far more fulfilling sex life and experience orgasm far more frequently than all the cosmopolitan counterparts. And if you'd like, tomorrow when you go to Supermerica or some other place, stand there and read the cover of Cosmopolitan this week. I almost brought one, but I was embarrassed to even buy it. The whole cover, a woman, her breasts are huge there, sticking out for everybody to see. Eastern's technique that'll double his orgasmic pleasure. I want to tell you something. These people are crap. Statistics prove it. They're crap. Just like statistics prove smoking is very bad for your health. Trust me. Cosmopolitan doesn't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. They just want to sell a magazine and they want to continue ruining your life. And God wants to give you a great life. Now, here's what it says near the end of this article. Several studies looking at the flip side of sexual satisfaction appear to bear this out. Okay, wait a minute, I got to start up ahead. All church ladies, the church ladies seem to benefit from the belief that sexual pleasure is not the be-all and end-all of human existence or even a key to a happy marriage. While sexual fulfillment certainly contributes to marital satisfaction, Mayo says the sexual enjoyment is more commonly a byproduct of a stable, happy union rather than the primary cause of it. Several studies looking at the flip side of sexual satisfaction appear to bear this out. For example, a new study published this week in the Journal of American Medical Association found a strong correlation between marital discord and sexual dysfunction. And a 1993 study in the Journal of Sex Research found that losing one's job is more likely to trigger sexual dissatisfaction among unhappily married men than among happily married men. Finally, church ladies appear to benefit from the belief that God made sex. In 1993, research review by psychologist Timothy Kelly found that frequency of church attendance positively affects sexual satisfaction above and beyond one's commitment to traditional sexual morality. Similarly, the controversial 1993 Janus report on sexual behavior found the non-religious have a tendency to focus on the more technical or physical performance aspects, while the religious pay more attention to the mystic and symbolic dimension. Put another way, churchgoers are apt to delight in the Edenist pleasure of being naked and not ashamed, of celebrating the transcendent intimacy found only in the marriage bed. Interestingly, the Bible encourages such exaltation. Not only does it contain an entire book of Solomon that celebrates marital intimacy, but it also contains other passages that says things like, "Rejoice in the wife of your youth, let her breast satisfy you at all times, be exhilarated always with her love." Now, these religious teachings are apt to come as a shock to those who believe God is the cosmic killjoy when it comes to sexuality. But if one wants to know why church ladies are having so much fun, my best guess is that their husbands are actually taking these biblical passages quite literally. And to that I say, amen. That's the truth. See, this is another reason we started The Rock, is because most people out there, and many of you that are now in here tonight, view God as the cosmic killjoy. God is that puritanical idiot who doesn't want us to have any pleasure. Just the opposite. Just the opposite. If I told some of my friends, and I'm not going to, if I told some of my friends the kind of sexual, wonderful things that happened between me and my wife, they wouldn't even believe me. God can give you a life that only God can give. No one else can give it. Okay? Now, the sixth thing. In a marriage relationship, and this, I had to cover this because you'll know when I say this. I've had a lot of questions about this. In the marriage relationship, you are free to explore and enjoy each other's bodies. The only limitation is the comfort level of your spouse. Always be sensitive to their concerns and desires, especially you men. Time and tenderness and understanding helps your mate become more confident and less inhibited, and more willing to adventure out towards new and fulfilling things in your relationship. And I put, and I'm not talking about chains and whips. I just wanted to make that really clear. I don't want to get too graphic tonight because I really don't want to embarrass you. But I've had a lot of people ask me, Mark, and they get really quiet and they look down on the floor and they go, is oral sex okay? Whatever you and your mate together in your bedroom, in your marriage, decide on, that's up to you. That's up to you. God made your body. He made it to enjoy. It is not something to be ashamed of. There are many of you here who are going to have to overcome your inhibitions. And primarily because we've sown so much hedonism, it's left us rather shell-shocked and feeling quite hurt. But you follow God, let me tell you something, He can change your life. The last one is this, and you need to know this. Sex and romance and marriage are rarely spontaneous and must often be planned for and worked towards. That doesn't make it artificial. That's the reality you're dealing with because of jobs, kids, commitments, and your health. You see, what do you see in the movies? See this guy, this girl, he comes home, she's waiting, hardly anything on. Passion starts at any moment, at any time, over a football game, over dinner, on the kitchen floor. Folks, let's get real, okay? Lust and passion is not deep, fulfilling sex. So you're going to have to realize that when you're married, you work at things together. You plan things together. You take each other on dates and you work at this together. It doesn't happen like it's tempted to happen before you're married to the person. Next week, all right? Next week, we're going to go into what you need to know about relationships before you damage yours. Okay? What you need to know about relationships. And I'm not talking about just with the opposite sex. I'm just talking about relationships, period. What you need to know before you damage yours. And I just want to reiterate to you, the whole reason I'm doing this is not because I think I'm better than you. I'm not. It's because I had to learn these things really the hard and painful way, many of them. And because I care about you, I want you to know them before you're in that situation. And some of you may be in it now. If I can help you get out of it, call me. Call Greg. Greg's in Colorado at our other rock in Fort Collins doing a conference this weekend, but he'll be back Sunday night. Either one of us, give us a call. We'd be more than glad to talk with you. We're not here to condemn you, to look down on you. We love you. We care about you. This is our life. Loving God and loving people, that's what this is about. And I'm only telling you this because I have had to deal with all the broken lives over the last 14 years. And we want to put Humpty Dumpty back together. And only God can do that. All the king psychiatrists and all the therapists will not be able to put your broken life back together. Only God can do that. God can do that. And I'll get to that eventually, how He does that, okay? Thank you for being